Welcome to the GOG Cast, brought to you by XSplit Broadcaster. Simple yet powerful, live streaming and recording. And now, your host, Leah.
Welcome to another Girls on Games podcast. My name is Leah, and I am your host for this show. This is episode number 149. We get another sweet one for you this week. Topic of the show is an interview with Miriam Pilgrim, who is the project manager and communications at Sauropod Studios right here in Montreal. That's going to be a great one. Before we get into what everybody's playing, of course, want to remind you, if you enjoy GOG Cast, you can subscribe on iTunes, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, and Podbean. All right, it's time to introduce you to who I'm talking with this week. It's just a two-woman show. Allie, how are ya?
I'm not too bad. How about you?
Pretty good, pretty good. It's kind of like the inverse of last week. You weren't here last week, and yep. Kat and Simon were, and now we flipped the tables a little bit.
Yep, we're at... Definitely, it was an off week schedule-wise for us.
It happens. I know Simon's actually at the Rainbow Six Siege Invitational here in Montreal. That's why he's not here, doing that buffs of nerfs thing. And Catherine had to go to a wedding.
Well, I guess we can't hold either of those things against them.
Nope, we can't. All right, what have you been playing video game-wise this week?
Oh, I've been kind of light on the video games this week. I started a game called Rime. It's an indie game that recently joined Xbox Game Pass, so I decided to take a look at it. And I've also been playing Monster Hunter World continuously for the past, 2 weeks. But yeah, no, Rime played from start to finish in about 2 sessions. And it's an interesting little game. I made a tweet sometime last week that indie games need to stop making me cry. And that tweet was actually caused by Rime.
Oh, yeah?
Because, once again, another indie game reduced me to tears. It's an interesting... I mean, it's a good game with a good story. I'm not quite sure if I'm a fan of the gameplay because it's puzzle-based.
Okay.
And you guys know how I feel about puzzles. but it had a really good story. And I'm almost upset that it was hidden behind puzzles, because it's kind of one of those things where I would have wanted to just explore and find the pieces at my leisure without having to jump through hoops. Mm-hmm. But as part of Xbox Game Pass, you can't really go wrong, right? Because it's free, it's right there, right, ready to download. So if you're one of those people who likes, it very much felt like an indie game. So if you like indie games and if you like crying, then maybe check it out.
So interesting, because I downloaded this game. It's free for PlayStation Plus for February. So I have it installed, but I haven't touched it yet. And when you wrote it down that you were playing it, I was really happy to be like, oh, now I have, Allie's 2 cents to go with me deciding to go and jump in here. Maybe. And I like puzzles, so this should be interesting.
Yeah, if you like puzzles, it'll probably be even more so up your alley. But yeah, it's a beautiful game. With a pretty great soundtrack, so
very
definitely
cool.
Give it a download.
How long have you put into Monster Hunter now, time wise?
I think I'm at 40 something hours right now.
Okay. Do you know what the expected runtime of that game is?
Infinite. I would say. So Monster Hunter is a very grind heavy game, and once you reach end game, in quotes, because they're really, I mean, you're always striving to improve your armor, your weapons, stuff like that. I could say you could easily be, depending on if you take your time, you could probably be at about 20, 25 hours to hit the actual end of the story. Because the story kind of has two endings. I don't mean two different branches you can take, but I literally mean there's like, you hit one spot, and you think it's the end of the story, and then you play through some optional quests, and all of a sudden you've got more story missions that you don't exactly see coming. So I'm at that point right now. But, as much as I love this game, I don't want to give it a pass right off the bat, because Capcom definitely definitely decided to take the non-simple route when it comes to certain mechanics in the game. And I think it can be really off-putting for people, because I feel like it's one of those games where, like, people are so divided. They either really like it and are playing it nonstop, or they're like, they're watching people play it and they're thinking, oh my gosh, this is way too overwhelming. I can't do this right now. But I feel like people are of two minds.
I'm taking apprehension before I jump into that game. I think I'm waiting a little bit just to see the lay of the land before I get in there. It's a little nerve-wracking because I feel like I might miss the boat and all the people playing, but I have a feeling that people are going to be sticking around with that game for a while. But I hear that multiplayer is definitely a big part of it. So are you playing with Adam?
Yeah, I've been playing with groups of people. I played through like the beginning, like very, very, very beginning content solo, and then started grouping up with people because it is more interesting. But Capcom, for shame, the hoops that you have to jump through to get into a multiplayer game in Monster Hunter World are absolutely ridiculous. That honestly, it's so off-putting. But I definitely recommend having A, the time, B, having the group, and C, having the patience, because it is very much like the grind is just so real. So real.
Allie, you're gonna be very, very happy with me. I got my first ever 100% achievement in a game on Xbox.
You did?
I did it in Sly Rancher last night.
Very nice. Congratulations.
Thanks. So I've never been an achievement hunter, mostly because we play so many games and I'm playing them on all different platforms. But there was something about Slime Rancher that hooked me, and the achievements were not... Like, it wasn't like, do the hardest thing ever. Do you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, they were all super accessible and just helped in the gameplay, and they were fun.
Yeah, I found the achievements in Slime Rancher were a prime example of a developer using achievements as, like, goalposts for the gamer. So there was basically just, like, hey, look, here's, like, different things you can do in the game. And they're not super difficult, but, like, give them a shot and we'll give you 5 gamer score for it. You know what I mean? Or, like, check out this mode and we'll give you a few gamer score for that, too, which I thought was great. They weren't, they didn't ask the world of you, and they balanced fun gameplay with actual achievements.
Totally. And I find that it's still, like, I still have stuff to do in the game, and I know there's supposed to be an update coming this month. So I'm still stoked to go back and play, even though I finished the story, I finished the 5-day rush, and I finished the achievements, which is weird. I can't ever say that I've, like, had that where I'm like, yeah, I still have stuff to do after completing 3 major parts of the game.
So I saw that you were playing it, because... To our listeners, I would like to take full responsibility for Leah playing this game.
Yeah, she was definitely the influencer. I use Allie a lot because we have similar gaming habits, especially when it comes to the simulation style.
So, Monomi Park, if you're listening, you're welcome. But I played that game a lot, and I stopped playing as soon as I got to, and I don't want to, like, I don't want to say any spoilers or anything like that, but I literally stopped playing after I was a foot away from the end of the game, like physically in the game, you know, the end.
Why?
Point. Because I didn't want it to end. And I
But it doesn't.
But the thing is, I was scared to find out what direction the main character, well, not the main character, because you play Beatrix LeBeau, but the characters whose footsteps she's following. I was scared to find out what direction he chose. And I didn't want to look it up. I actually didn't for a long time look up information about the game. I just explored and figured out stuff on my own, and so I didn't look it up. And after seeing you were back into it, because, you know, I saw you on my news feed, I decided to jump back in last night and take that, like, literal, I took that
you
literal
did?
Last step and found out what happened, and so that also made me cry. So there you go, there's another indie game that made me cry on the list.
I think we're going to have to do a Slime Rancher spoiler cast or something, Allie, because, like, oh, I need to talk to you about these things, and I need other people to talk with us that enjoyed it, and also, you know, with the big forewarning of the spoilers.
Yeah, that's I'm totally down for that.
Let's do it!
So I went through, and I hadn't played since the Wildlands update.
Right.
And so I got to experience all of that, and I was having a great time. And I really hope Monomi Park keeps updating. And I'm telling you guys straight up, if you're listening, I'm so willing to like spend money on DLC for Slime Rancher.
Ditto. I'm like, the more chances that I can see new slimes and new places to go have adventures and stuff. Ugh. But it really made me think about achievements and trophies in doing this, mm-hmm. because just prior to me jumping into Slime Rancher, and the reason I jumped into Slime Rancher, so I was full-fledged doing the achievements or trophies. God, I'm going to have to be careful with that. The trophies for Assassin's Creed Origins on PlayStation. And I wanted that to be my mm-hmm. very first time ever platinuming a game. Still working on that. But what happened is I was doing that one day and Michael needed to record a podcast. Mm-hmm. So they needed the back room. I only have one PlayStation. I have multiple Xboxes. So I left the PlayStation here because it's in this room because it's just a struggle to move it between two different mm-hmm. TVs, and went out on the Xbox and was flipping through like games. I was like, I want to play something kind of like, you know, a simulator. Like, I was like, I feel like I need another Stardew Valley. You had recommended Slime Rancher. So mm-hmm. I downloaded the demo and that hooked me. I was done. And I had never really thought about achievements and being an achievement hunter until I started playing that game, and then it just started popping naturally. And like you'd mentioned before, the achievements are designed so that you look into other things, other parts of the game that you probably mm-hmm. wouldn't have touched before. Like, I never would have made some of I don't know what they're called in the game, like the slime ball basketball hoop. What are they called in the game? Curios?
I think that one is either called a curio or a decorative. I don't remember which section it's under.
I never would have built that. Do you know what I mean? I would have been like, man, yeah. I don't care. But, you know, I went and did and got the achievement for 50 points. And I was like, this is awesome. And people need to look at this for achievements. And I think we almost need to have like another episode that we just talk about achievements and trophies and how, what works and what doesn't and stuff, because I have this whole new appreciation for it.
Yeah. Achievement design is something I've always been interested in, something I've dabbled in, mm-hmm. In my professional life. And I find it, I think that they're underappreciated tools in game development, especially mm-hmm. when it comes to directing a player and helping a player either play the game correctly or experience the game the way that you want it to be experienced, or helping them get everything out of a game that's mm-hmm. humanly possible. So I would totally be down for a discussion like that.
All right, so we have two additional, one podcast topic and one spoiler cast that we have to do, and we have to plan soon.
Simon and Kat are going to come back and be like, what? What
do you Why mean did you schedule everything? That'd be hilarious. The other game that I finally started, though I had purchased it the week before, was Night in the Woods on Switch. Mm-hmm. I don't know if it has me yet. Maybe it's the type of game, and I feel like I'm very passive in that game, and I want to be more interactive. Have you played it yet?
No, I've been waiting for that game to go on sale.
Ah, yeah. So it just jumped onto the Switch eStore when I had gotten it. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think I need you to watch it. And then, because there's just something about it that's just not grabbing me yet. And it's not like the concept is there. I should be on that. I like the art style. It has a certain gameplay moments, but there's just something about it. Maybe it's also my mindset of the type of games I want to be playing right now, mm-hmm. where it seems more along the lines of an interactive story rather than a game. So we'll get there. I'm not closing the door on it, but I'm just not. It's not when I think I want to go play a game now that I'm going to pick up Night in the Woods right now.
That can be tough with games that are like narrative driven, right? Where they were. Wire your attention to really appreciate the entire thing. Mm-hmm. That can be hard if you're just not in the mood to sit down and pay attention. Sometimes I want to sometimes I want to multitask, right, and watch Netflix and play a game at the mm-hmm. same time, and that's not always yep. possible. So, yeah, I'll get back to you if I ever end up playing it. But I know it's on Xbox now as well. I'm just waiting for that sweet, sweet sale to hit.
Yeah, exactly. Hey, there's nothing wrong. I know if we can throw the extra money at the game developers in the beginning to appreciate a game, but like, hey, there's nothing wrong with waiting for a game to go on sale. Like, money's hard to earn, right?
Yep, and I've got way too many games right now to buy new ones.
Yeah.
Unless they're too good of a deal to pass up. That's really what it comes down to, is that I'm trying to complete titles before I add more to my backlog.
Makes sense.
And with indie games, it's a little bit easier, right? Because they tend to be kind of shorter. But mm-hmm. Yeah, I definitely have a few more to play before I can, in good conscience, add another one to the list.
How about Rhyme? How long? You said you did it in two sittings. How long were your sittings?
Oh, God. I would say about... So I streamed it.
Right.
I streamed it, and my fiance helped, like, was playing at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
We both took turns. So I would say that it probably took us, like, maybe 6 hours.
Okay.
And that was, like, interruptions by stream, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. All right. Stuff I'll look into that. That's a good weekend game.
Yeah, if you want to spend the whole weekend crying.
Well, not really, but, you know. All right, let's get into the news right after this break. So we're back with the news of the week. Allie, what do you have for me?
So I think first off, we should probably talk about Twitch's newest feature that they just added. They've decided to go ahead and add chat rooms. Well, I guess I should specify in-channel chat rooms for streamers. Okay. So basically, viewers can chat in public or private Twitch rooms that'll be accessible 24/7 via the streamer in question's channel.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So it looks like these rooms can be set up either private or public, set to mods, subs, or everyone. And it looks like they can have more than one room as well at a time. And I don't know how I feel about this. I feel like it's kind of, and you know what? Like, I feel weird saying this, but just hear me out. I feel like they're almost overstepping. Where, like, it doesn't feel necessary.
Yeah, I totally understand that. And it's funny because the Polygon article that I read up on this, the first thing it says is Twitch introduces new Discord-like chat rooms.
Yeah.
Discord does its thing and does it really well. Curse does its thing and does it really well. Why? There are other things Twitch should focus on, I feel, than cannibalizing someone else's product who's already out there and doing it really well that you're trying to, like, scramble and kind of take bits and pieces from. Why not partner with one of these companies? Pretty sure they already partner with Curse, but...
Yeah, I feel like, you know, I see the plus side of this. You know, if you mm-hmm. have, if you have a, if you're, if someone's streaming and you've got 400 people in your chat mm-hmm. and your mods need somewhere to talk that isn't mm-hmm. a whisper to one another or a DM.
That's true.
I can see how that would be convenient for them to just be able to tab over to a room instead of going over to Discord. But I mean, the convenience, I mean, if you think about it, they're probably one tab away on your desktop. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So I can see also it being super easy if you've got, like, filters for subscribers where you don't have to go through, like, a third party app or do the extra work or something like that to make a subscriber only room.
The only thing is, I am not a huge fan at all of Twitch's UI as it stands right now, and I can just see this adding more clutter to it.
Do you think Mixer may do something like this?
No.
No?
No, I don't see this happening anytime soon. I personally think that, you know, and I mean, places like Mixer and Twitch are already working with, you know, Discord API and stuff like that to make the cohesion of those two platforms
mm-hmm.
as smooth as possible. So I feel like by doing this, Twitch is saying, well, we don't need Discord anymore. Mm. And I wouldn't be surprised if there are certain partners on Twitch that now have a clause in their contract saying that they have to use Twitch's chat system.
Ooh.
I wouldn't be surprised if that's a thing.
That could get dicey.
Well, I mean, it's up to them, right? So it's a thing that they'd have to decide on, but I could definitely see that happening in the future if it's really something that Twitch wants to push.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't really know how much of a resource hog this is on their side to have these 24/7 constant chat rooms running.
Yeah, I can understand that too. I haven't been in Twitch a whole lot lately, but I know that they have done a bunch of updates recently when it came to the UI and all that kind of stuff.
It is terrible.
Yeah, and that's part of it too. Also, I don't know. Ever since we moved off Twitch is not my favorite place. I'll go there if there's like an E3 thing or something special that a developer's doing. But if I'm going to go flip around and look at streamers, I usually just stick to Mixer at this point.
Yeah. I went to Twitch actually the other night because there's someone I wanted to watch. I still have friends on both platforms. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And yep. So I wanted to go watch a friend of mine, and it really did look like that person was online, judging by the homepage. And then the time I actually got to her channel, she was actually hosting somebody. Like, I thought it was such, like, I could, you know, I'm not a stupid person when it comes to web design, but Twitch's UI just evades me.
Yeah.
I don't understand what's going on their homepage.
Yeah. Not saying that Mixers are the best either. I mean, it could use a little TLC here and there, but there's definitely a few things that they make easier than Twitch does.
Yeah, it was a little bit disappointing. But yeah, I'm not quite sure what Twitch is trying to accomplish. I feel like they almost would have been better off to say, hey, now, you know, instead of having just one chat tab, you have two chat tabs, one for your mods and one for just general chat. So if something, you know, this is to help you. This is to help you and keep your channel safe. And, you know, if your mods need to have a discussion or contact you, they can do so in this channel a little bit more easily. I feel like they maybe should have spun it like that and left out the sub only chat rooms and the everyone chat rooms. Just made it a moderation tool instead of a community tool.
It might have been easier to manage, too, at launch to have just the moderation side, because moderation on Twitch is a challenge. That would have been interesting to get that ironed out better first rather than open it up to everybody. Hey, they got a lot of people working there. Maybe they can handle all that.
Oh,
once.
Yeah. Like, I mean, I'm sure they probably haven't bitten off more than they can chew. I would just like to point out, too, that, like, the way that you name your rooms in this Twitch chat thing is exactly like how you name them in Discord. So it's the hashtag.
Mm-hmm.
And then the name, and if you want spaces, it's underscore. the dash. Yeah. And I don't know, I feel like if you're really really gung-ho about Twitch and you're constantly on that platform and you don't really pay attention to any other platforms, maybe that's beneficial to you. But I feel like gamers have openly embraced Discord.
It's a thing.
Yeah, it's definitely a thing. So I don't know. I don't see the point, Twitch.
I had to explain Discord to some colleagues last week because of the whole Spotify Connect thing. Mm. And I freaking love that.
Yeah.
The fact that you can see what people are listening to, like, I find that super intriguing, especially since a lot of people do have, like, playlists that they make for gaming and that kind of stuff. And I like, you know, if I know then that I really enjoy the type of music that I hear on Alice's stream, then I can go and listen to her stuff. And yeah, it's cool. I like it. They're doing cool stuff at Discord.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I agree.
All right, so the news story I have comes from IGN, and it says Steam purges developers' games after finding manipulated review scores. So this is more of a, you know, word to the wise. Don't try and fake game reviews, because we understand as gamers that we take the reviews with a grain of salt, even if they come from special folks like IGN. But hey, game developers, maybe you should be real careful about this too, because Steam doesn't have any time for that. So, to give you the short and sweet, Incel Games has had all of their games purge from Steam after the developer was discovered manipulating review scores with fake accounts. Essentially, what they've been doing is the company's CEO threatened its employees that he would fire them if they didn't buy the game on Steam and then go and leave a positive review. That's a big no-no.
Huge no-no.
Huge no-no. Steam and Valve caught wind of this and discovered that it was true, and then laid down the law and said, nope, this is not gonna happen, not on their watch.
Oh, boy.
So we all know the tales of gamers, not even like not even these cases, but like people manipulating the reviews, like a review bomb as a like few. I think that's what it's called when a bunch of people band together to go and downvote a game or leave negative reviews to have it affect its bottom line and further further purchases and stuff like that.
Oh, do you
Steam
mean being an asshole?
Yeah, well, literally being an asshole, but groups of them. Like, we know it's a tactic that that people,
yes, indeed,
you know, certain gamers on the internet follow to order to go and rebel against a video game company. Could be truth. Like, it could be a good thing that they're doing it against a game company that's doing, you know, bad, malicious stuff. Or it could be just they're salty. Because wasn't Firewatch the one that really got a hit with that a few years back? Yeah. So, I mean, Valve went and made a special tool to be able to count that. Now you can go and see, like, reviews by date, so that you can kind of see when all of a sudden there's a plunge. But it's really cool that, you know, they've also realized that, yo, there's some shady developers out there too that are also willing to go and spin the reviews so that you think the game's super good. It could be, or could be terrible, but people are lying to you, and they got no time for that.
Yeah, I think what Steam did here was set a good precedent, because that's just incredibly, incredibly not okay. Just even reading what the developer wrote in the email is, like, infuriating. Here's a quote here. It says, of course, and this is from the CEO requesting that the staff buy the game and write reviews on Steam. So, CEO. Think about that. The person in charge, their boss.
Their pay, that signs their paycheck.
Who signs their paycheck and who's, you know, who holds their livelihood in his hand, says, of course I cannot force you to write a review, let alone tell you what to write, but I should not have to. Neglecting the importance of reviews will ultimately cost jobs. Ooh, love that little threat there.
Ooh.
If insert game name fails, Incel fails, which is the name of the developer. And then we will all have no job next year. That is so upsetting and underhanded and gross. And if you are listening, I hope you do everything within your power to avoid incel games.
Well, hey, Steam made it real easy to avoid them, because they banned them from the store and took all their games down.
Yeah, and it just, I guess, to maybe address anybody's concerns. If you already own the games, you will still be able to access them and play them. Just new users or users will not be able to buy new copies of the game.
I wonder if a class action lawsuit could then occur, because if someone says, I bought this game because it had positive reviews that were spun on by the company and I want my money back.
I could definitely see that happening.
Yeah, we will keep an eye on this, because this is something that, of course, affects the game industry, but other online retailers as well. I know, you know, stuff happens on Amazon, but, you know, take everything with a grain of salt, do your education, look at multiple, you know, reviews of something, not necessarily from the original site, but, you know, like around the internet as well, and know that,
I would just like, you know, to
just
point
be vigilant.
Out, I would just like to point out that this, I just went to this developer's website, and they are so obviously one of those developers that, oh my goodness, they just they copy other games. Their website right now is an entire, this looks like it was ripped from the Guild Wars 2 website.
Really?
Oh my goodness. So yeah, these are definitely people that you want to stay away from.
Oh my, we will keep our eye on that one. Allie, you have another one.
Yeah.
What else is going on?
Yeah, so let's talk about Sea of Thieves.
Woo.
And so it looks like the floodgates opened earlier this week on some of the Sea of Thieves details that have been, you know, not addressed or kept hidden up until now. We're getting closer and closer to the game's release date. And so so the kind folks over at Windows Central actually got to go head over to Rare and ask a few questions and talk about some of the biggest things on people's minds. And that includes loot crates, DLC, paid content, all that jazz. And Rare kind of put our minds at ease by saying that there's not going to be any loot boxes in the game. Or at least not loot boxes in the traditional sense, where you will not know what you're buying. Which is pretty cool, because that's been a big discussion lately, you know what I mean? And it's nice to see a different approach.
I don't think anybody wants to use that term, loot boxes, in their marketing right now.
Yeah, no one. Everyone's trying so far to stay away from that. So yeah, it was a great article. I definitely encourage you to go over to Windows Central, because they have tons of exclusive content from Rare and Sea of Thieves right now. But we do have one particular piece of good news that I would like to point out to you guys is that we will be getting pets in Sea of
Thieves.
And you will be able to put your pets in the cannons and launch them.
I'm making a weird face right now because that doesn't sound like a fun thing to do with a pet.
Well, in a very cartoony Sea of Thieves way, just like you can put your crewmates into the cannons, you'll be able to do that in the same way. And so basically, you know, these pets are not going to be loot crate bound where you have to buy 36 crates to get that one, you know, peg leg tabby cat that you want. And I'm just totally throwing that out there. That's not confirmed or anything to be a pet.
I have a mental picture now.
Yeah, I mean, rare. I'm just saying, you could totally use that idea. But, you know, you'll be able to buy directly the pet that you want, which is pretty awesome. There's not going to be any season pass. There are no DLC packs. That stuff is going to be delivered for free. Because Rare is concerned about, they don't want to separate players. So I think that Sea of Thieves is going to be one of those games where we see a large, kind of like ESO, where you see a large selection of aesthetic content for purchase. And that's okay. I'm okay with that. Because if I enjoy a game enough, and especially with this game going onto Xbox Game Pass at launch, I'm not going to be spending $60 out of pocket to play it. So I'm going to be much more inclined to drop $10 or $20 in microtransactions to make my ship and my pirate look super awesome. So, I don't know about you, but I'm pretty on board with their business plan so far.
I don't have Xbox Game Pass yet, but I'm pretty sure I'll be dropping that $10 very soon.
Oh, heck yeah.
A month.
Oh, hell yeah.
Yeah, because I'm excited. I haven't played any Sea of Thieves yet.
What?
I'm ready and raring to jump in. Yeah, it's one of those things where, like, well, time management, because this past little while has been kind of chaotic with promotion at work and stuff. And it's also a game that I kind of just want to wait and jump in and discover it from the beginning when it's released.
Okay, that's fair.
Yeah.
I accept that.
Accept that.
I accept that.
But I think the whole world is kind of looking back at loot boxes right now and looking back at like how they're releasing games and stuff. A news story came out of Gamma Sutra about Ubisoft and how it's opting for quality over quantity for its big game releases. They want to focus their energy and resources on smaller number of releases to maximize potential. And that makes total sense. I mean, Ubisoft has learned the hard way that, you know, a releasing, just getting something out the door in maybe a less than stellar state is probably not the greatest way to keep gamers happy. And they've had a lot of good reaction with Assassin's Creed Origins that I think they really want to play, you know, continue that trend. Mm-hmm. Gamma Sutra says during a recent investor Q&A, Ubisoft Chief Executive Officer Yves Guillemot and Chief Financial Officer Alain Martinez explained that the studio's decision to put additional development time into its new releases rather than quickly churn out AAA titles is paying off and allowing the team to create more engaging experiences. I think this is really interesting too, because I think it's going to open up the realm for us to get more stuff like Slime Rancher and to spend time with it, to get more stuff like Rhyme, to like hold us over while we're, you know, waiting for those big games to come out. And Ubi's done so many cool things like Child of Light and Valiant Hearts that I think that they could easily, you know, fill in the gaps with solid pieces of content like that, solid games that, you know, there's still the money machine going that's helping. And when the big banger game comes out, like, they're ready, you know, they're gonna put all the resources into it that needs to be there.
Yeah, I would definitely like to see Ubi revisit that short burst of like indie games that they had right there, like you said, Child of Light and Valiant Hearts. I really like them to go back to that.
They've also got a huge push on games of service light now. I know Siege is like kind of like resurrected from the ashes. Like I just mentioned that the earlier in the show that Simon's at the Invitational, and you know they're still really feeding stuff into For Honor, and that's probably what they're looking at for a business plan. They know that they can go out and get these banger story-driven one-player games out there to really grab people, as well as service, you know, the gamer that comes back time and time again with something that like a service. So it's interesting to see a huge company like this really pivot, because I think they've they've been under fire like EA has been in past years. And I think they've really sat back, looked at the grand scheme of things, and evolved to become an awesome video game company that keeps turning out like amazing games.
Yeah, I hope they continue. I honestly hope they continue on this upward trajectory, because I was getting very frustrated with Ubisoft games, and I don't want to feel like that. I want to be able to enjoy these titles. So I'm excited. I'm excited for Far Cry 5. I really hope that we see a break from the usual copy paste that Far Cry has been for the past 2.5 games.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely Primal things they changed a bit. Primal was different, and even 4, but I can see why it's like almost not as revolutionary. Like, they just needed more time to sit back and think about things.
Yeah, I just wanted it to be different. I just wanted it to be different. Yeah. So, hopefully we'll get that.
Mm-hmm. All right, it's time for topic of the show. We've got an interview with the project manager and communication specialist at Sauropod Studio, Miriam Pilgrim. We're going to get into that right after this break. Miriam, welcome.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm good. I had amazing brunch this morning. Super good French toast. And I'm very full.
Awesome. So yes. You're ready. You're ready for this.
Yes, I prepared.
Well, thank you very much for joining me and being our topic of the show. You are currently the project manager and you do communications at Sauropod Studio, correct?
Yeah, I am.
So before we get into your job and like what kind of like a day in the life is, let's talk about you and video games. You seem to be quite passionate about the subject.
I am. My route to go into video games is kind of like, I've been playing games since I'm like, I don't know, 7 years old, I think. My uncle gave me a Nintendo 64, and I've been playing Zelda Ocarina of Time, like, multiple times. And, yeah, from there, I kind of thought I could work in game as an adult. I didn't know it was a thing. And I studied photography and cinema before, like, knowing about like moving to Montreal after and like starting to be like, oh, there's like meetups about video games and like, oh, there's game people that make games and stuff. That's interesting. And from there, I just like went to like a bunch of meetups and like GDCs and those kind of like PAX also. And I just started from there and like helping friends with their like booths and stuff. And eventually someone was like, do you want to work for us like full time? Like, can you help us? So yeah, that it's strange because it's been like, I don't know, 7 years, I think. So like just starting from like knowing absolutely nothing and go to like events and stuff.
We love talking to people doing different types of jobs in games.
Yeah.
And we haven't spoken to anybody who does the project manager and communications role quite in this type of form before for an indie studio. What's it like for you, like day in the life kind of thing? What's the kind of stuff that you work on?
Well, being at the indie studio is very like you wear multiple hats. So like I can do like 8 things, like 1 hour on like each quest that I have. So like currently right now we are working on secret stuff. So from that, we're like just doing like, I'm doing like a bunch of like research on like how to get publishers, how to have a good, like how to decide when it's a good time to release a game, or I don't know, doing research for like, how do you go on like consoles and stuff, because we only launched a Castle Story, so it's like a computer game. Like all of the consoles world is like a super different world. So like doing like a bunch of research on that, and making sure everyone's doing their job on time. There's another person that's like doing like more like project managing with the whole like dev team. I'm more like in charge of like all of the contractors or like the people that are doing like the music for us or like illustrations. So I'm writing a lot of emails and making sure the people outside of the studio are doing their job on time. So it's a bunch of like a lot of like management.
Now you're currently working on a new project that is secret. I was on the website and saw Castle Stories next to this secret project. Castle Stories launched full out August of last year. What was that process like for you? Because it sounds like you've been in for the... Have you been at the studio the whole time since it started in 2010?
No. Hired me... November 2016. Yeah, it's been over a year. And it was like really much like end of project thing. Before Sauropod, I was used to like work with like really smaller team, like 7 people. And here we're like 20, 22, I think. So it's a big, big indie studio. So it was like our 2 co-founder, not Benoit, but well, there were 3, but like 2, François and Germain are like the 2 founders, and like Benoit, the brother of François, joined a little bit after the Kickstarter like years ago. But it was like them doing like more of like, is everyone doing their job on time and stuff, but like also programming and also doing like all of the arts. So it was really hard to like manage everything. So I've been there for like, yeah, for the last year and a half-ish of Castle Story. So it was a lot of like making sure like our contractor for like the music and sound was making their job on time. And like I was also working with my colleague Carl that he's doing like a lot of like marketing. So like helping him like doing like assets and like making all the trailers and like filming the game and like, yeah, making the trailers for all of our updates and the launch update. And yeah, it's really fun. Like, I'm glad that I can do like trailers because it's really remind me my cinema studies, because I studied that with just actual film, but it's really nice to like grab that knowledge and put it into video games.
I've been following Castle Stories for quite a while because you guys have obviously been a while in the Montreal realm. We have it often at different events, but for folks who are not familiar, can you give a little bit of the, you know, the elevator pitch of what is Castle Stories?
So Castle Story, my pitch at events is like, Castle Story is a creative RTS. So what Sauropod is really into is like mixing a bunch of different genre and like put it into just one game. So Castle Story, you have the like actual like sandbox you can do. It's a voxel game, so you can do pretty much whatever you want with it. So you control those yellow characters that call Bricktrons, and you like gather resources and build castles or like a fortress to protect your home crystal. And like you can just, we have like 4 different modes now. So you have like the regular sandbox, you can just like chill and focus on like building the biggest castle you want. But there's also like multiplayer called like Conquest. So like you have like different like team of up to 4 people that can like play together or against. And they have to like conquer like all of the map or just one, it's like against the AI. So it's invasion. So you can play with your friend also, but it's like waves of enemies attacking you. And it's just like, the more you play, the more difficult it becomes. So yeah, it's really creative, and it's, you just can do whatever you want because it's voxel. You can break every single voxels if you want. Gonna take ages, but if you want to do it, you can.
What's the reception been like for the game?
Because it's been around, like the Kickstarter was like 5 years, like almost 6 years ago now. So we already had our fan base. And the community around Castle Story is like super lovely and super also creative. Like we have a Discord for it, and we have like players that like plays hours and hours and like building like incredibly stuff, like really beautiful stuff. You can build your own map. So like there's some people that made like the map from like Link to the Past, or like The Castle in the Sky from Ghibli's. And yeah, it's just like a really incredible community.
In my research on everything to do with the game and yourself and everything, I saw that you do like a Thursday stream of the game showing like cool yes. stuff that you guys are doing. I noticed you look like you're there documenting at the same time. Mm-hmm. Being an indie studio, does that help you being able to do those kinds of streams and have direct feedback? Have you found that beneficial to you?
Yes, because before launch, we were like in early access for a few years. And like every time we had like updates, we were like showing those on like stream. It was really like a transparent kind of thing, just like showing everything we were working on and having that direct feedback of like the players just be like showing the thing and they react to it like instantly. It's always super rewarding because it helps us to like see what the flaws are or like what people wants. And we, our community guy, Chateau Jean, that's doing like all of the streams every week. Every day he goes on like all of the forums and just gather like all of the like comments of our players. And we have like a board of like all of the like demands. And every time we just like add like dots on like, oh, this one is the most request feature. And like, we just like within the years, just like adjust to like give the player what they want, because it's meant like games are meant to be fun. Like, and we're like super close of our community. So yeah, I think being indie and like being able to like be that close to our fans and players is like something I wouldn't not have. And like, I never worked at a AAA company, so I don't know the other side of the middle, but, yeah, it's super nice. And like most of our devs are on the Discord. So like every time, like someone has a question or like need helps, there's always someone there to help. It's super nice.
And that's really cool.
Yeah. And I think it's nice also for players to be like able to be close to like the actual team. Yeah.
Well, you end up with some really dedicated community members because they feel like they've contributed, yeah. And then they become your greatest, spokespeople.
Yes, totally, mm-hmm. totally.
How do you find the Montreal indie development scene? Is it good right now? Do you find that there's a lot of camaraderie between the different independent game studios here in the city?
Yes, I've been living in Vancouver too for a while, and I feel like every city has their own like. Everyone is super close. Like if we have a question, we can just like knock at doors and be like, hey, do you know about like this kind of things? And if they can't answer you, then we're just like, oh, but I know this other person to that other studio. And like, just, it's just like a big like web of nice people and everyone. I don't feel like there's, I don't know how to say it in English, but like la concurrence, like
camaraderie.
No, it's like no one is like against each other.
Like, oh, everybody's cheerleaders for each other.
Yeah, it's just like everyone wants to help each other because everyone want everyone else to like succeed, because making games is super hard. It's not like we can't lie to ourselves. It's extremely hard. And like there's no competition. That's the word. Like no one's gonna like keep like secrets. Like, oh, I'm not gonna tell them like this thing because like maybe they will do it better than us. Like it's no, everyone is just sharing their knowledge. And yeah, Montreal is very nice for that. And we have like Pixels here to help like women in game, doing like workshop all the time and like mentoring Montreal. So, Mont-Royal Society too, like it's how I discovered game back then. They're like doing like monthly meetups and like creative meetups, and Gameplay Space also do like a bunch of events like playtesting every month. And it's just, there's always something. There's always an event to go and like talk with people and like sharing knowledge and asking questions. It's very, very nice.
One thing that I really admire is not only that fact that you're like you're working in a game studio, but you definitely have a passion for games. And yes. You started a project that I find really intriguing, From Indies with Love.
Yeah, it was with my friend Dominique Ferland. He's working at Square Enix right now. He at some point tweeted like, what about like just like writing love letters about games we love? And I was like, that's really cool. So we started that. He mostly started it, but eventually like life and work caught up. But it was just like a bunch of friends just wanting to like write love letters to like their favorite indie games or just favorite games in general. It's been a while, like it's been dead a little bit for a while, but like I keep like writing down ideas, and I printed t-shirt a few years ago for it too. But it's a really neat project, like just sharing our love of games with letters, and yeah.
What I really enjoy about it is that obviously like there's different types of reviews, and the thing is you keep running into the same kind of systematic approach, but this, because you've constructed it in the form of a letter, and the way that you guys write these, it's not necessarily, it's like you're talking to the game. It's like you're talking to your loved one about this awesome game you played.
Yes.
And I just finished, or I'm not totally finished. I mean, I don't think I'll ever be finished, but I've been playing Slime Rancher, and there's actually a lot of the narrative is brought to you through letters. So it felt like this interesting connection through letter writing, which we don't really do
anymore,
I know, right?
Like I have a pen pal from Vancouver, and we like write each other letters of like just like a regular life, and it's this feeling to like open like her mailbox and having like a letter to like her own names and be like, you're just like super excited. It's like another, like we're all connected to each other with our smartphone and Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, but like receiving, like having someone handwriting you a letter, it's like a different like adrenaline kind of thing. It's just so, so nice and rewarding. And that's what we wanted to like have with from Indies with Love, just receiving like a love letter about something you're really excited about. It's just, it's nice. And yeah, I'm starting a new thing with like one of my friends from Seattle, doing like role playing by writing each other letters. So yeah, I'm really excited to start with that. We like kind of like exchange ideas, but yeah, writing is nice, and sharing your love to something through a letter, it's just really, I don't know, it's really nice.
Do you think that's something you would turn into a published work, or is that something just for you and your friend to enjoy?
From Indie with Love, or like my personal thing?
The personal thing with the friend in Seattle.
Right now it's just like something like kind of like just a role-playing game with her, but I've been writing down ideas because there's some people over Patreon that does that, just like writing. I don't have the names right now, but I know that there's people having like those kind of projects, just like writing letters and like doing like actual role playing with people, and it's, I feel like it's very, could be really fun to have a bigger project, but it's such a big scale. It's just like, how do you have people like going to the post, or just, it's a lot of logistic, but I've wrote down ideas.
Yeah. I can see it being really interesting, and like we're very used to this style of oh my goodness, like chapters, or getting bits of games and pieces and things like that, where you have a long wait in between the two. Oh my god, I'm totally losing a blank on what that's actually called now on the top of my head, and everybody's probably
episodic.
Yeah, there you go. It's like either you're yelling at me, or all the people on and listening to this are yelling at me, being like, Leah, get the word. But yeah, it's such a cool idea, and we don't take the time to like sit back and think about the handwriting. Like, I think they've taken like cursive out of school and everything now too.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
And what I liked about the From Indies with Love is you've guys got like a bunch of different people that are writing these love letters, but at the bottom they're all signed. And I like going down and seeing what everybody's signature is like too, because that's a little piece of them.
Yeah. Oh, you're, I've been meaning to like go, because like I started full-time in games like a year ago about mm-hmm. the time we were doing that project too. So like everyone was just like so busy with their own life, because once you start working in games, you just have no time to do anything else. Like I can't play more than one game at a time. But yeah, I really need to get back to that project. Yeah.
I'm glad I'm giving you inspiration.
Yay!
The other project you're working on that I think is really cool is the NASA Everyday Project, because space is awesome.
Yeah, it's an idea I pitched to my partner a while ago, and I was just like, I really wanted to get into like make Twitter bots.
Yeah.
And I was just like, I love space so much. What if we have like a Twitter bot that just like tweet NASA's photos all the time? Because NASA's, I think it's last year, they made their database just open to everyone. So you can just go and spend hours like looking at space photos. And yeah, it's just like it tweets once a day, a random picture from the NASA database thing. And yeah, it's really fun. Sometimes you have like weird, boring photos of like a group photos of like a bunch of people, but like sometimes it's just fine, like amazing, colorful, like universe and stars thing. It's, yeah, it's a nice surprise every day to just see like, what's gonna be next? There's another account, I think it's called Crooked Cosmos or Crooked Space. I will send it to you, but it's mm-hmm. like an account that gets space photos but like glitch them in a really cool way, and it's Ooh. It looks amazing. It's really
I love
cool.
that. Yeah. Oh, it's so awesome. Yeah. Oh my goodness, you're doing so many cool things.
Thank you. I'm trying to make our little corner of the world better.
Nice. what game are you playing right now?
Right now, I'm full into Monster Hunter World.
Oh, like, yeah, how's that going?
It's amazing. It's my first Monster Hunter game. And like, I read a bunch about like how they made it like so much like friendlier for like new people. And it's been an amazing ride so far. I think I'm like 35 hours in.
Nice.
We bought a PlayStation 4 just for that.
Oh, wow.
I was like, okay, we need this game. We got to play it. And it's really, it's amazing. It's just so beautiful. And yeah, the Pelicos are so good. I made my cat.
Nice.
As my tiny Pelicos. And yeah, it's super amazing. Yeah.
Well, I have to thank you for being on the show. This is
thank
awesome.
So
before I let you run away, though, yeah. I'd like you to shout out your social media and stuff so that people can track you down and follow all the fun stuff that you are doing and working on, because I think it's all super inspirational.
So my Twitter handle, it's Mademoiselle Pilgrim, but MLLE Pilgrim, because mm-hmm. Mademoiselle, MLLE is the short for Mademoiselle in French, but I never saw any English people like being able to spell it right, because it's like Volpengrim. So it's weird, but yeah, it's or just like search Miriam Pilgrim and I'm pretty much everywhere. Like I use the same handle as Twitter everywhere.
Perfect. Thank you, Miriam. This has been wonderful. Really appreciate it. Keep up all the good work.
You too. Thank you.
Right, and that wraps it up for this week. Of course, I want to thank our wonderful website hosting partner, Fun.io. If you're looking for website hosting of any sorts, you should go check them out. Stream team going well. How's streaming for you, Allie?
Streaming is going awesomely. And it seems like Good. It's going awesomely for the rest of the team, too. So we've got quite a few team members, part of the Girls on Games streaming team over on Mixer. And if you ever have some downtime and want to check them out, make sure you head over to girlsongames.tv. where you have a handy list of basically everybody who's live and who's part of the team.
And on our website, we've got some new content. Of course, Nerdy Crafter made that wonderful DIY Monster Hunter World sculpture, which is really awesome and you know, not expensive to make. It's under $10. But we've also got from our lovely, lovely technical producer, Simon. He's gone and done a review of the Samsung 49-inch. Yeah, you heard right. 49-inch. CHG90 QLED gaming monitor. He did a video. He decided he didn't need a normal unit of measure, so decided to use his cat Kupo as a unit of measure, which is really funny. But, you know, it has a great video. Shows you all the cool features of that that monitor and how his anguish was going back to his other monitors after he had to ship it back to Samsung. That monitor is so spiffy. I showed it to my husband. He was like, what? He's like, do you want one of those? I'm like, do you have the money to spend on one of those? Like, it's expensive, but if you do invest, it's well worth it. So that pretty much wraps up the show. So before I let Allie go, I want to give her the chance to shout out her social media so you guys can follow her.
Yeah. So you can find me as 8-Bit Blonde pretty much everywhere on the internet, including Mixer, Twitch, and Xbox Live, all that good stuff. So yeah, hit me up.
Perfect. Mine is Leah Jewer on most social media platforms, GOG Leah on Xbox Live and Mixer. I'm hoping one day that I'll be able to change my PlayStation 1. I don't even remember what my PlayStation 1 is. Oh, well. But of course, you want to know everything there is to know about Girls on Games. You can follow us on social media at The Girls on Games on Twitter and Facebook, Girls on Games on Instagram. We have a wonderful Discord channel. You can chat with us, continue this lovely conversation about video games and more on discord.me/girlsongames. But if you ever need to know anything at all, you can track us down at our home base. That's our website, girlsongames.ca. So thank you very much, Allie, for joining me in this adventure of a two-woman show.
My pleasure.
And we'll be seeing everybody next week. Should be a great one again, and we'll talk to you soon.
Bye.